So, Norman, you mentioned earlier in the show that you have a counterintuitive story about suicide.
Yeah, I think that if I were to take a straw poll of people and ask them about what causes suicide, most people would say depression. And in fact, depression is, major depression is an underlying factor in many people. But there's growing evidence that not everybody who has suicidal thoughts or attempts suicide has in fact got a diagnosable mental health issue. And one of the people who was the first to recognise this and who's taken it further is Maria Oquendo, who's Professor of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. One of her early studies was taking a group of people who'd been thoroughly screened by psychologists. So in other words, they were people without mental health issues who had no drug and alcohol issues, and a proportion reported having suicidal thoughts.
Our first reaction is like, that can't be true. We didn't believe it. But we started looking into it because I thought, if this is true, this is a very big deal because it goes against clinical lore.
Was it a big proportion of your group?
It was 11%. Like, that's not nothing. And their thoughts were not, I'm going to go kill myself now. But there were more things like, I'd rather not be alive. I'd rather be dead. I wish I could go to sleep and not wake up. Things like that, that you might think are not that harmful, but in fact have been shown in the literature to be predictive of suicide attempts and sometimes death. That has met with a tremendous amount of skepticism amongst my colleagues. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it's just a fluke. And so I approached a different group of colleagues and said, you know, you have these large epidemiologic studies that are representative of the U.S. population. We should examine this because I know that the interviews that you use, which are delivered by lay people, they're not clinical interviews, but that you make assessments of many diagnoses, 28 to be precise, and that you also assess suicidal ideation and behavior separate from the occurrence of psychiatric disorders. And they agreed to do this analysis in two very large samples.
And what did you find?
What we found was quite surprising to me. I was not surprised that we found some individuals who reported that they had made a suicide attempt without having met criteria for a psychiatric disorder. What shocked me was how high the proportion was. 1 in 5 individuals who made a suicide attempt did so before the onset of a psychiatric illness.
Did you have any data on self-harm rather than suicide attempts or completed suicide attempts?
We did not have any data on self-harm, and because this was a live population, we did not have any information about suicide death. But I think those are incredibly relevant questions, in particular because there's a lot of controversy about the relationship between suicidal behavior and non-suicidal self-injury or self-harm. And we know that there's a close relationship, but they're very different. Like if you're a clinician sitting in an emergency room or in a clinic talking to patients, these are very different experiences from the patient's point of view.
Did they go on to develop a mental health issue?
13%. So 20% did not have one by their own report when they made the suicide attempt. 13% of that 20% did eventually develop a psychiatric condition.
Now, people who've looked at this and made this observation have said, well, maybe there's something else going on with these people that might not register as a mental health issue according to the diagnostic and statistical manual, but they might have had physical or sexual abuse as children, for example. They might have been through trauma. There's other things going on in their life. They might be Black, First Nations person or what have you, and therefore experience racism. Do you have any cross-checking on other factors which might have made these people have these thoughts or caused these thoughts?
We don't have data from the survey about these things, but I think that you're spot on. And in particular, it's quite likely, we think, that the individuals who are making these attempts absent a psychiatric diagnosis are either subject to trauma that they find very difficult to bear, and we know that, as you clearly know also, that childhood trauma, physical or sexual abuse, is predisposing towards suicidal behavior as well as to psychiatric conditions. And also that the stress of discrimination is traumatic and leads to multiple psychiatric consequences down the line. So I think that your observation is spot on. And one of the things that was compelling to me is that in a carefully screened population, we could find suicidal ideation, even in response to things that we were asking about stressors. And when we looked at the stressors, and these are stressors that were more like daily hassles, and I'm talking now about a different study, as opposed to I had to declare bankruptcy, I was arrested by the police, you know, major things, even in response to relatively minor things, like an argument with a significant other, that they could experience and report these kinds of thoughts.
Somebody listening to this might say, well, I've had trouble getting doctors to listen to me. There's certainly evidence from Australia, it's old evidence now, but there's evidence that in emergency departments, when people come in with self-harm or even a suicide attempt, sometimes they're not followed through or taken seriously. What's the implication here for people who are making cries for help, but also for the doctors, psychologists and others who are seeing these people either in general practice in primary care or in emergency departments? Because they say, well, I did a depression questionnaire on them and they came up negative on the depression questionnaire, so I'm not that worried about them.
Yeah. So I think that the implications are that we tend to rely, and by we, I include myself, the bias amongst clinicians who focus on psychiatric and psychological problems is that suicidal behavior and thoughts are related to other psychiatric conditions or diagnoses. And what this data is telling us is that that assumption implies that we are at risk for missing 20% of the population who may go on to make a suicide attempt. Your comment about patients often experiencing not being heard or listened to is very common. And believe me, not just in Australia, it's a worldwide phenomenon. And I believe that it is at least in part because clinicians are overwhelmed by this problem, because it's one of the few, maybe the only medical problem in which the patient doesn't want help. They don't want you to interfere with their self-destructive behavior often. And then you don't have an alliance with the patient. Usually as a physician or as a psychologist, a clinician, your goal is to improve the patient's health and the patient is usually aligned with you. But in this situation, the patient may be quite disaligned with you as a clinician. So that creates this conundrum for the clinician.
Do we know why? Certainly surveys in Australia of people with depression suggest that about 30% of people feel they can manage this by themselves and they don't need to see a doctor. But that's depression, not necessarily people who've got suicidal thinking. What's going on there that they don't want help?
Look, most people are highly ambivalent. It's a minority of people who are like determined, this is the right answer for me right now. There's nothing else to do. But when people get to the point where they're considering suicide, they often view it as the only solution to a problem that they feel trapped by. And they think that your intervention to help them stay safe is thwarting their ability to escape the problem that they feel trapped by.
And just so that we're not too negative about this, I mean, there is evidence if somebody confides these thoughts to a friend or a colleague, just intervening and guiding them to help can make a big difference and interrupt the process.
That is absolutely true. And I'll go further and say that individuals who have survived very serious suicide attempts will tell you more often than not that they are relieved that they're alive. So there's every reason to override the person's wish to die at that moment, because it's often not the case that there aren't other solutions. It's that people develop this tunnel vision and it's more difficult for them to generate alternate solutions to killing themselves.
And again, just to emphasize the mental health first aid here, you will not tip somebody over into suicide by asking them if they've had suicidal thoughts or self-harm thoughts.
We have very good data that even for adolescents, it is safe to ask them about suicidal thoughts. It does not plant the idea in them.
So there are huge challenges here for this group of people.
Absolutely. And I think that one issue that hasn't received the attention that it deserves is that we have some interventions that are very effective for preventing or mitigating suicidal behavior that are simply that. It's not a treatment for depression or schizophrenia or PTSD. It's a treatment for suicidal behavior. And that we really need to focus on developing treatments that are focused on that, not only because suicidal behavior happens independent of depression, which is the most common diagnosis that people have if they have a diagnosis, but also that now we know or have strong evidence that it happens absent a diagnosis.
And these treatments are based on cognitive behavior therapy?
Many are, but not all. There's also, for example, the safety planning intervention that was developed at the University of Pennsylvania and Columbia University, where you actually help people develop a plan to identify the things in the environment that may trigger them to become suicidal. Because a lot of people don't realize, not everybody is attuned to factors that precipitate unstable emotional states for them. But a clinician can help them identify that and help them devise steps that they can take to keep themselves safe.
Mary Quando, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, and have a lovely rest of your day.
That was Maria Quendo, who's Professor of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. Just shows you, Tegan, the complexity that suicide is.
Oh, absolutely. And if this has brought up stuff for you, you can always call Lifeline on 13 11 14. There's other helplines that we'll put on our website. Well, that is it for the Health Report for this week. But if you are hungry for more of us, we do have another podcast called What's That Rash? And this week we have a tasty topic for you.
Yep. Artificial sweeteners. That's what we've been asked about. Are they better for you than taking sugar, or are they worse for you than taking sugar? Do they make you lose weight, or don't you? We'll be answering all those questions for you in this week's What's That Rash?
Find What's That Rash on the ABC Listen app and hit follow so you never miss an episode. And we will see you back here for more Health Report next week.
We will indeed.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.